Hi, it's Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Who is this fucking lunk anyway? He looks like a ball sack in a toupee.
Hello and welcome to Still Watching, a weekly television podcast from Vanity Fair. I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Chris Murphy. We're here to discuss the first episode of the final season of HBO's Succession.
Monsters. Meet the fucking monsters.
But before we break down that episode, let's return to the end of season three, where we left off with the great unification of the Roy children against their father, Logan.
How do we feel about killing Dad? Mixed feelings?
Pass me the fucking shotgun.
Okay.
Big episode in Italy. After Logan pushes his own children sort of out of the company via a back channel deal with his ex-wife.
I'm not sure it's been good for you, all of I'm sorry. I love you all. Bye.
We just walked in on Mom and Dad fucking us.
The Roy children have sort of banded together.
His ex-wife and his daughter's now estranged husband, Tom?
Yes. We can't forget.
I might need you as my attack dog.
Shiv's husband, Tom, also helped orchestrate the deal that saw Roman, Shiv, and Kendall sort of cut out of dealings at Waystar Royco.
You bust him here, guns in hand, and now you find they've turned to fucking sausages. You talk about love?
Meanwhile, older son, redhead stepchild-ish Connor is getting married to his girlfriend, Willa, with his eyes still on the White House. Okay. Let's quickly break down what happens in episode one of the final season, boohoo, of Succession. It's called The Munsters. It's Logan's birthday, and who's missing from the party? His children.
I could get him to text a request for a call.
Text? I'm afraid we're going to need to hear that voice.
Kendall, Roy, and Shiv get tipped off that Logan's birthday present to himself is buying the Pierce media empire and drop their startup plans to scramble together a rival bid.
Different people saying different numbers. 8, 9. What's next?
I know, it's so confusing. What comes after 9? 9B?
Which leads to one pissed off media mogul.
Hi. Okay, so I have your dad, and he has a message.
Congratulations on saying the biggest number, you fucking morons.
Amid all that corporate intrigue, Tom and Shiv's marriage looks like it's coming to the end of the road.
A whole lot of crying and bullshit is not going to help that. So if you're good, we can just walk away with our heads held high and say good luck, yeah?
Well, okay.
And Greg has a sexual encounter at Logan's party. All caught on CCTV.
You've accidentally made him a sex tape, Greg.
Oh, my God.
You need to tell him.
This show really knows Shiv, Kendall, and Roman so well.
Yeah.
And I feel like, disagree with me if you want, but like I feel like after the seismic events of the last scene, of the season finale of season three, this is exactly where they would be.
Oh, 100%.
And still in a mansion. Scheming away, but kind of like idiots.
Kind of like idiots. And I think even the throwaway lines, like, you know, like, oh, Shiv, like when we were in Dubai, you were so on board. It's like we're getting all this context. And that's exactly, of course, they'd be able to go to Dubai, you know, after getting like pushed out of their own company. Of course, they'd be sort of like scheming, you know, dreamer Kendall that he is would, you know, think that he has like the next hot idea rather than actually dealing with the wreckage of all their lives. Shiv's marriage is falling apart. Roman has like weird sexual stuff going on with Jerry. Kendall is a huge mess. And rather than sort of deal with like any of the way more pressing issues, like personally in their own lives, they're like, oh, let's start a fake made up bullshit company that has no way of going anywhere. And let's put all of our energy into that, which is so them.
It fails 10 minutes into the episode.
Literally, I was about to say, it doesn't even get to a liftoff. It literally dies before our eyes, before the episode ends. Yeah. But it also sounded like the worst idea I've ever heard from the jump.
And we're kicking off our discussion of this episode, this premiere episode, with this because, I don't know about you, I've been in media a long time. It was so eerily familiar. Mm. But I thought this, maybe it's just because I'm biased as someone in media, this nailed it. I totally believe that these three Silver Spoon assholes, led by Kendall's bluster,
would be
like,
Kendall.
This works. But you can tell that, like, Shiv at least is like, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Shiv is, Shiv, the voice of reason of the three siblings, the three doofus siblings. But it was just so, it's such a perfect skewering of the media landscape where, you know, websites and things, they fold every day, they come and go, that the Roy children would think, oh, we're going to revitalize, we're going to reinvigorate the media landscape with just sort of like an impossible thing. I mean, the line, did you hear, it was sort of like in the background when Kendall was like, yeah, it's like the ethos of a nonprofit, but with the margins, with crazy margins.
Yeah, crazy margin potential or whatever. And I think that it's such a good characterization of exactly this kind of heir, not heir to just a static fortune, but to a business.
A business.
Unless they apprenticed in that business from like 15 on, which I guess maybe Kendall is supposed to have, but like, how would they know what to do? But they're just throwing out buzzwords, and they're like, well, our dad's media, so therefore we are media.
It's our birthright. We just absolutely have to do it. And I mean, even Roman says, he says it's an exclusive members club for everybody. Like every analogy didn't make sense because these things can't exist. And it was so funny. I thought what was so, instead of like making a good idea, they were so obsessed with the font. They were focusing on the layout of the website rather than interrogating, is this a viable idea? Does this have any legs? Could this ever exist?
Do we know how to build this?
Yes. You
know? Yeah, it's all aesthetics first. They use the word disruption, which like should be a red flag to everyone at this point. If anyone says that word to you seriously,
run the other way.
They don't know what they're talking about, or they're actually aiming to destroy an industry with no viable replacement for it. I'm looking your direction, right, Sheriff? But I think that this show, when it gets its satire right, it really gets it right. The ironic and I think very true to real world stuff pivot, speaking of pivots, is that no, they abandoned this kind of dumb rich kid idea. And then they're like, oh, we're rich kids. Let's just buy this show's version of the New York Times.
Yeah, let's just buy a real entity that has actually, you know, say, and that is, you know, let's not build something from scratch. I will say it really did sort of like touch my heart how like Roman was like the only one who like kind of believed in the idea. Yeah. He like kind of was like excited to like do something with this. It was very younger brother energy. He was like, he was excited to like do this venture with his siblings. Whereas Shiv, like one foot out the door all the time. That's how Shiv is. She's, you know, she's always looking around. And Kendall is just so blissfully unself-aware that he was into the idea until another idea presented itself.
Yeah, the next shiny thing, you know, the keys in front of him.
Yeah, jingle, jingle.
Yeah. I think that Roman, if these were real people, I could see Roman running a kind of fun, subversive media company.
He could have run Gawker.
He could run Gawker. Or, you know, he could even be like a Jay Penske.
Oh, yeah.
Who runs, like, he somehow owns Variety, THR, and Deadline. I don't know how that works.
That seems like that should be real.
And I think IndieWire.
Conflicts of interest, but okay, continue.
But, you know, I could see Roman functioning like that. Shiv, you know, this episode does take careful time, and we'll get to it a little bit later, but, like, to talk about this impending election in this fictional America. She started the show as a political person, a political operative, and now maybe they're setting her up to end that way. So, yeah, really, I think, yes, Roman was kind of the only one invested. But then this thing happens where they find out, I guess Shiv is still back-channeling with Tom.
Yeah, Tom is still playing both sides. I would really, I'm curious about that.
He's, you know, we talked a lot about Survivor and White Lotus, and unfortunately, I'm going to keep bringing it up on
it's
this.
It's still relevant.
But, like, he's playing that really, on Australian Survivor right now, there is a player who's doing this, where go to one little group and say, you're my final three, go to the other, you're my final three. That's what Tom's doing.
So far,
in episode one, he seems to be okay.
He seems to be where it seems to be working for him.
I think it's going
to
go well. Yeah. But anyway, he tells them, your dad's going to buy Pierce Media Group. And Pierce, we met that family, I think, in season two, was
it? Oh, yes. I think that's when we went to Cherry Jones' house.
Yeah, PMG, they refer to the company as. Cherry Jones leads the group, Nan Pierce. They just want to divest. They're just kind of old wasps. They want to get rid of this.
It's too much. It's too much.
And obviously, this would be the feather in Logan's cap, not just because I guess it's supposed to be a valuable asset, but because, like, here's crazy hard-charging conservative Logan who can buy this world's equivalent of the New York Times and do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and ostensibly run it into the ground. That's what they. That's what we think he would do with it.
Sell the, you know, like liquidate it basically like a private equity firm would do and extract whatever resources they can and then destroy the thing's legacy.
Yes.
But that's too rich an opportunity for the kids not to swoop in and try to beat him at his own game.
And beat him they do. They really do. And it's, I was like, it's so hard to talk about this show because I don't want to be like, I was so proud of Shiv, Robin, and Kendall. But I was honestly like, I was like rooting for them. Like they really needed a win after last season against their father and the way they just got fully blindsided and just like fully pushed out of Waystar Royko. To have any sort of like arc this season, we had to come out with a big win for the kids so that they were sort of on even playing field. Not even even, but like something akin to an even playing field with like Logan versus his kids. And so them pulling through and getting Pierce Media Group, like kind of a big sleigh. That's kind of a big sleigh.
Yeah, it's contingent on a lot of things. Like what if...
Gojo.
Gojo. What if another sale doesn't go through? But for now, things seem good for the kids, which, you know... In a vacuum, in a moral vacuum, I was happy for them, and they seemed happy, and there was genuine affection passed between them,
and
that was sweet.
As a unit, and that's what we got at the end of last season, which I think we don't want to overlook, is that they came together. The children came together and put their differences and all their bullshit aside and, like, united against their dad. And they're still a mostly united front, it seems, heading into the season, after the first episode, at least.
And if you want to look at it as sensitively as possible... These kids grew up in a sort of an abusive household, certainly emotionally abusive, if not more. And so, yes, there is a strength in a sort of, again, in a moral vacuum, sweetness to them coming together. But on the flip side of that coin, we also have Logan. It's his birthday. We don't even know exactly how old he is, but we're guessing in his late 70s, 80s, early 80s. And I think that was an interesting sort of bookend to the way this show started. We have to start thinking about the beginning of the show and now the inevitable end of the show, where, you know, he has a stroke and he's kind of laid low and everyone's like, oh, he's going to die, which is what kicks off this whole thing to begin with. He's not dead yet. He's having another birthday, but he is feeling... a tingle of, or more than a tingle, of existential wonder and angst and like, what is this all for?
Oh, 100%. And actually, the first episode, you know, as you just said, it began with his 80th birthday. So he's actually in his like,
early 80s.
It was his 80th birthday party in the very first episode of the first season of Succession. So,
so
now,
he's more mid-80s.
He's like mid-80s. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he's dealing with his mortality. You know, he makes that request. He's like, I thought there, a cardinal was going to be at the party. Like, where's the cardinal? You know, where's the cardinal?
Yeah, some weird religious streak still in him.
Yeah, yeah. And he's talking about, you know, with his driver hitman, his
Colin,
best,
his best pal.
His best pal, which, about what happens next, what happens after we die, which I do think we should keep some eyes on Logan, whether or not he gets through the end of the season. And it, but it does make sense that, like, you know, this is a man who literally has everything. There is nothing that he doesn't have. He has accomplished every single thing that he has set out to do completely. And yet, that might not be enough. It might not. Right. It might have all been for naught because guess what? All of his kids are not at his birthday party. I mean, three of his kids are not at his birthday party.
So do you think that that sort of... He leaves the party, goes to a diner with Colin, who is like all of a sudden his best friend, which is like so sad.
So sad.
Do you think that was really all stemming from his rift with his children?
Yeah, I do think he's bored. I think he's bored of winning. He was bored of that party. He hated, you know, the pretense of it and everyone applauding
him. All these pigs, like, filling, you know, he was just like, he really had disdain for the party guests. Like,
yes, complete disdain. He definitely has disdain for his kids, too, but they're still his kids. Yeah. And that's the thing that makes the show so interesting is that you can hate your family, you can backstab, you can knife in the back and in the front, which they've all done. At the end of the day, they're still your family. And if your kids are not at your 83rd or 84th birthday, what do you have? It's got to sting.
And I think that, you know, they've become his sparring partners, his adversaries. And he dealt a really near fatal blow at the end of season three. Mm-hmm. But now they're bouncing back. And as the episode progresses, like, Logan seems to perk up. He's sort of woken up by this sudden challenge to this acquisition of PMG. So, like, in a weird way, his kids who think maybe they're trying to destroy him are kind of
keeping him alive. Yeah, keeping him alive. Yeah. Like, this is this is what he's living for.
Still watching. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
I do have a question. This episode is called The Munsters, and yeah. Logan's makes a couple of references to, like, The Munsters. And, like, when I hear The Munsters, I think, like, oh, like, that's, like, Addams Family. But I know it's, like...
It was, like, a knockoff of The Addams Family. A lot crasser. I mean, crass for, you know, 1950s, 60s terms. But, like, just kind of, like, dumb monster jokes. And it was, like, just a family of monsters.
A family of monsters. Okay. Yeah. And that's basically what Logan was referring to about his own... I mean, that's...
His family, his world, too, I think, look at just kind of just like inanity, you know, kind of gruesome, ghoulish, but also, you know. But again, it was a weird reference. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like in Logan, the thing where he's being like, someone tell me a joke. No one tells jokes anymore. It's like, is he okay mentally? Like, I don't know.
Well, again, I think it goes to show like the monsters of it all and then the existentialism and the mortality. I think he is... profoundly unhappy.
Yeah.
I think he's like depressed and empty and bored. I mean, Marcia, where's Marcia? Marcia's gone. I'm actually afraid.
She's in Milan shopping forever.
And if she's not on this season, I'm going to say I'm going to be upset because I ride for Marcia and I hope that doesn't mean that she's just like gone forever. I know that Logan is with Carrie, his assistant.
Yeah.
That's very clear. We've got that. But it feels like, and this is, it's not even cliche. I think it's just so interesting. It's like, the man who has everything ultimately has nothing. And he seems to be that right
now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's King Lear to an extent. Yes, I agree. I thought a couple seasons ago, it was like Marcia could emerge the victor at the end of this. So I don't think that's going to happen, but I would like to see her again. I did love the line, she's in Milan shopping
forever.
That was pretty good. Carrie emerged in an interesting way in this episode.
Carrie playing mom.
Yeah.
Carrie trying to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Getting the kids to call Logan on his birthday.
But also taking on a lot of the roughness of the way that the Roys speak to each other when, you know, Greg shows up with a date. We'll get to that. But like, and she's being sort of curt and, you know, profane to him about it. So Carrie, I've got my eye on her this season. I'm curious where that's going to go.
Dark horse.
But I'm also curious to hear what you think about this whole... So we've got two factions of the family warring over PMG with Nan and her daughter, Naomi, in the middle. That negotiation stuff for me, my hunch is that that's not how these things actually go. But it was pretty exciting TV, right?
Okay, I thought it was absolutely thrilling. And my hunch is that that is exactly how they
all
go.
Right, all right.
I thought it was so great. And at first, I do want to shout out Cherry Jones, who plays Nan Pierce, who
is
an incredible, you know, delectable theater actress, Tony Award winner, icon, is so incredible at playing Nan Pierce because her sort of, the performance of it. I think this episode had a lot of amazing sort of like bad acting. Mm-hmm. Like Shiv at the beginning being like, what do you mean? What was I doing? Like lying. You can tell that she's lying.
We're just talking about maybe talking or whatever she says.
That's clearly. She was clearly lying. And then Nan Pierce in the negotiation sort of pretending to be like, this is so disgusting. I hate money. 8, 9. What comes after 9? Like pretending that she's not deeply, completely invested in getting the highest price for her company. And it's like, it's such a rich people thing to do to be like, money. I don't care about money. It's beneath me. And it's like, no, like you're lying. You literally, that's maybe all that you care about actually. And I will say, not to get too political, I do think it's a little bit of a liberal thing to sort of be like, it's not about the money. It's just, I'm just selling my family business. I don't care if it's $8 billion, $9 billion, or $10 billion. Yeah, you care. There's $1 billion on the table.
Of course you care. I think it's specifically, maybe more specifically, it's old money.
Mm.
It's WASPy money. It's yeah, we have a huge spread on Martha's Vineyard, but we look at this old Volvo we drive. You know, we're not that showy about running, which is why I do have to ding the show a little bit. I don't buy, from what little we know of them, I don't quite buy the Pierce as having, like, a vineyard villa in California.
Okay, well, is that supposed to be California? I wasn't sure if we were in Europe or California.
Oh, do you think it was Europe?
I thought it was maybe Europe. I thought it was maybe, like, Italy.
Oh, I thought they, like, flew up to Santa Barbara and Napa or something like that. Okay, if it's Europe, then I buy that.
but it could easily be California. I couldn't decide if it was California or if it was Europe.
Right. I just see the Pierces as more Natasha Richardson in Parent Trap and less Dennis Quaid in Parent Trap.
That's such a perfect analogy.
Yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I think the characterization of both Nan and Naomi, the daughter, is pitch perfect. That, like, yeah, these people are as, like, money hungry and ultimately ruthless as the Roys are. They just show it in a different way, and they kind of hide it behind, like, oh, I just have a migraine, and oh, this is all so disgusting, all this talk. But of course, she's just trying to get the kids to, who are just all too eager to beat their dad to get the price up.
Yeah.
And then they do. They succeed.
Was that a good idea? I know that we said it was a win for the Roy children. Emotionally, it was a win for the Roy children.
On that afternoon, at least.
Was that a good idea? Did they pay too much out of spite for their dad? That's a big question that I have.
Well, Logan says, congrats on saying the highest number.
That felt loaded because it's like maybe you don't want to say
that.
You don't want to just say the highest number. I even know that. And I've never negotiated for anything in my life.
And you and I between us have about $10 billion in the bank.
Of course.
I don't know if I would spend that on the New York Times, to be honest. I like the New York Times sometimes.
Sometimes. And they even sort of mentioned that. They said the left is eating itself. That was a pretty very sly and very interesting and good allusion to sort of what's going on with the New York Times now.
Logan called them savages. He said that eating their own, they're savages.
They're savages.
Which was really, it's like the owner of this show's version of Fox News is calling them. That was pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that will probably be, this is the inciting event of the season.
Yeah.
Is this sale a boondoggle for both or just the Roy kids? Or, I mean, I'm hoping the Pierces will be more involved in the season. I mean, mostly because I want more Cherry Jones.
Oh, yeah.
But as a sort of kicking off point, like this company that is trying to lurch into the future by devouring an old institution, I think that's an arrival institution, not necessarily financially rivalrous, but like ideologically.
Totally ideologically.
That's an interesting, and then you also have this impending election.
Yes. I do want to say before we move on from the negotiation, I do think it's, again, the storytelling, Succession, the reason why it's like such an amazing show is like the details are so fantastic. Back to the 100, you know, remember that like Shiv and Roman and Kendall had the money men just like waiting outside for them, just like completely. And they're like, and Shiv even said like your bodyguards are being racist to them. They looked like they were maybe like Middle Eastern or whatever. And they just like kept being like five minutes, like, you know, they were just shooing them away. And then boom, cut to Nan Pierce. They're now the money men. And they can't even see how the tables have turned. And now they're the exact people that they were being rude to not hours before. It is such a beautiful mirror about like how one day you're the content and one day you're the you're the paycheck.
Exactly. And my hunch would be, knowing that the way that this show is written and no one stays riding high for too long, that they have let their eagerness and bitterness about how their father treated them last season get the better of them. That this deal is a poison chalice in some way.
Yeah, it can't be all, you know, roses.
What I want to know about,
yeah,
at one point, Nan is talking, you know, in her sort of guarded way, like, well, you know, there's the stockholders, and but also the family's concerns, you know, so-and-so's divorce, and then Anne's disaster in Maine. What was the disaster in Maine?
What could have possibly happened to Anne in Maine?
I mean, did she run over one of the bushes in Kennebunkport on her wood-sided motorboat?
Like, boating does seem to be...
it's always boating.
It's usually
something
boating.
Something happened on a fancy, like, wood-sided motorboat.
Yes, definitely some sort of sailing, yachting accident.
Some son or grandson did something. Sorry, I just watched Murdoch Murders, so I have that in my head.
So did I. Oh, yeah.
Grim. But yeah, I love that line, like, Anne's disaster in Maine, that'll never go explored, I don't think.
No.
But it's just one of those great little pieces of texture that this show adds. I think that the sharpness of the writing and the performing was maybe, for me anyway, no better evident than in a scene toward the end of the episode between Tom and Shiv, where, you know, these two are technically on opposing sides in business and in life. And yet they have this weary kind of nighttime. Tom's sleeping in some other downstairs room. She comes in. The dog doesn't recognize her. And they have this tired, sad conversation where sort of they decide to kind of dissolve the marriage, but then end up sleeping awkward, or not sleeping, but like lying down awkwardly on the same
holding
bed.
Holding hands.
So this is it, huh?
Hmm. Yeah. I guess. Gave it a go.
I thought that was pretty striking. I mean, I don't think these are good people just because they had a moment of weakness and connection. But, like, it was an important... I thought throughout this episode there were moments that were careful to remind us that these are, at the end of the day, flesh and blood people.
Yeah.
Who, like Roman says, should probably just be buying snowmobiles and sushi and enjoying themselves, and yet they can't.
Yeah.
What did you take from that sort of interlude with the Tom and Shiv?
It's up for debate. Was their relationship real? How real was their relationship?
Yeah.
It always seemed like there was gameplay involved. But that also was, I think, part of the fun. That's part of the dynamic of their relationship. And for anything to end, it's, you know, is difficult. And you need to process that. And to give that the weight that that final scene did of like, okay, something has irrevocably shifted and ended between these two people. And one of them is wants to talk about it. Tom is wants to be like, can we talk about what happened? Which I think is such a legitimate way to go through life. And then Shiv is like, actually don't need to, you know, has a completely different, you know, approach, being like, we know it's over. There's nothing to talk about.
She just wants to kind of needle him about his new sexual exploits that
the
she's heard about.
Disgusting brothers.
The disgusting brothers with Tom and Greg. Yeah, and yet that sort of guard drops eventually, and they both sort of seem to give in. I mean, I think that whatever, however their relationship began, which happened before the show started, they probably did grow to feel something for one another.
Yeah.
Maybe it was imbalanced, you know, maybe Tom cared more than Shiv.
Mm-hmm.
But what I kind of detected from this scene was, in a very human, relatable sense, like, this was a constant, and for better or worse, an ally in all of this madness. And now we're kind of willingly dissolving that.
Yeah.
I think the more cynic brain, which I think you brought up before we started recording, is, I mean, and Tom mentioned something about this to Logan, kind of in stuttering fashion.
Hilariously.
If he's legally not married to Shiv anymore, there is no formal bond between them. What is Tom's position at ATN?
What use is he to Logan?
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean... Oh, God, another great line. If we're good, we're good, right? Okay, it's like that says absolutely everything and absolutely nothing,
right.
Which is classic Logan fashion.
Yeah.
But Tom, I mean, and we see this over the course of the episode, to Logan, Tom is a way to get information about Shiv. He says, call your fucking wife.
Right.
And in without that link, and I think Tom even knows, hence the conversation that he has, is that like if he doesn't have that surefire, legally bound connection to Shiv, he could be out the door so fast.
Yeah.
Which might be why, I mean, cynically, it might be why he seems to be holding on more to their relationship in that final scene. But also, I'm going to take the emotional plea here and think that he loved Shiv maybe more so than she loved him, and he wanted to fight for it in a way.
Yeah, I mean, Shiv can be exciting, and she's, in many warts and all, an interesting person.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that Tom potentially, the wheels turning, being like, wait a second, if this marriage really ends, am I kind of going to get pushed out?
Yeah.
It is something we've seen in ways across all these seasons now, is like these other characters who aren't Roy family.
Yeah.
Who probably serve some utility more than some of the Roy kids do to the company, but they rise to the top and then they get pushed aside. I mean, it's very much how things worked in Trump world.
Mm-hmm.
And who are the constants there? Ivanka, you know,
Donald
Jr. to some extent, Eric, you know, I don't think Donald Trump even knows him anymore. But like, and you watch the kind of like frustration of these other characters, and it's like, well, what keeps the Roy kids around? Because they're blood.
They're blood. That's it.
And the best that Tom can do to get into that is be married. I mean, look at Greg. I'm basically a sibling.
Yeah.
I'm a cousin. And it's like, I mean, I guess Logan still lets you in his house and kind of lets you bring a date.
Well,
but like...
Let's talk about that. This is where my notes begin, right? Like where I have some slight quibbles, and maybe I'm being too harsh, but I have to ask you, Richard, is Greg really that stupid? This episode, he seemed exceptionally, like, straining credulity how stupid he was to bring a date that wasn't vetted. Like, that seemed crazy. Okay, that I could forgive. But, like, for him to have sex in Logan's house and not think that he had that whole place, like, camered up, like, that. And, like, maybe Tom was lying, but I don't think he was. I just think Greg was exceptionally doofy this episode, to the point where I was like, it's a little hat on a hat for me.
To be fair to Greg, they didn't have sex. They rummaged. There were rummagings.
Rummaging, sorry. That is so true.
What a euphemism for, I think I get what that was a euphemism for, but I don't know. I think Logan clarifies that in one scene.
He does.
But yeah, I think that Succession is not the only show that could potentially suffer from this, but like, and I don't know actually what's going on in the writer's room, but there is a trend, I think, on television when a show gets popular. It's like, are you paying a little too close attention to Twitter? Are you looking at too many memes? And like, Greg, of course, has become one of those fan favorites. Nicholas Braun has become the toast of downtown
Everybody
social scene in New
Rays,
York.
Like, honey.
Like, I just kind of wonder, yeah. Greg is a character who I don't think we've seen evolve quite enough. Yeah. At the end of last season, when he makes this kind of sort of pact with Tom, you're like, and I think Greg says, well, what good is a soul anyway, or something along those lines. I wanted to see that evolution more evident, but instead we got this comic C plot line where he brought, like, Bowtie's a really a camera date with her big
with
suspicious
coach bag
and her selfies. Yeah, I think you're right that that was a misstep in terms of like where everyone else has arrived at the start of a new and final season. It felt like we're getting more of the same Greg.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna, I mean, let me be perfectly clear.
Yeah.
It was funny as hell. I was laughing.
Yeah, no, it was entertaining. It's just like
very entertaining.
Maybe there's a different angle to take with him now.
Yes, and I feel like by this point, if we're four seasons in and he's been around this family for this long, I don't believe that he would be making those types of gaffes.
He would know you don't bring a first-time app date to Logan's 80-something birthday party at his stuffy Upper East Side mansion. Like, no.
No.
I know, I get maybe he was trying to show off for her or whatever, but like, yeah, I think that was odd. But it also kind of, it did go back to the thing where like ultimately Logan kind of
liked it.
Thought it was funny.
He thought it was
or
funny.
At least to hear Greg tell it, which could either be a sign of Logan's returning dementia or a sign that like Greg might actually kind of be in the fold of the family the way he thinks he is.
Greg, if Greg ends up on the Iron Throne at the end of this season.
Well, that would be very much actually how Game of Thrones.
I know, literally. That would literally be the same. It would be the same. But I do want to know what you think. Do you think his little girlfriend with her, you know, peasant bag, as Tom said, is she an op? Like, should we be nervous about her, or is she like gone, or do we not care about her?
Too early to say. I think they gave her enough lines, enough of a kind of early sketch of a character where she could be someone. But whatever comes of her, this sounds horrible, but like when Tom / the actor Matthew McFadden gets rolling on one of those, like, Tom is such a country club shithead about
polite
like
society.
He just nails like a certain snobbery that is kind of a feat and gay,
it's literally like, kind of gay.
and I think that that's such an interesting little facet that Tom has a really nasty streak in him that usually is just him abusing Greg.
Yes.
But no, Tom has a really nasty worldview.
Oh, 100%.
That I think we kind of forget. Oh, he's so hapless and dopey. And it's like, no. He would be a horrible to you or I were we to
absolutely
be in his company.
Such a striver, an elitist, such a snob. And, you know, and that makes sense for why he fell for Shiv.
Yeah. I think I sometimes get Tom kind of personality-wise confused with another bumbling character, which is Connor.
I see that. That's
who
fair.
Is back on the show. He wasn't in the climactic scene at the end of last season where the kids are, basically learn of Tom's betrayal and are learn that they're being pushed out by their mother and by their father. But Connor's back talking about his election. He's running for president.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's polling at, say it with me, 1%.
But that could get squeezed down to less than 1%. He's there with Willa, who at the end of last season agreed to marry him warily. Sort of.
Yes, definitely not with her whole heart.
And now she's worried Connor is talking about spending $100 million to keep that 1%. And she's like, but you'll still be rich after that?
You know? $100 million less rich.
So there's an election coming up in the fictional world of this show. My question to you, Chris, is how political do you think we're going to get on this season? Is it really going to be a lot about this election?
I think we're going to get pretty political.
Yeah.
I mean, even just from the teaser trailer that dropped, we saw Justin Kirk is back. He plays Jared Menken. Who is a
son of Alan Menken, the composer.
But who is very much a sort of a Josh Hawley type of Republican, sort of like, you know, very insidious,
handsome, but evil
and deadly,
like legitimately evil,
and knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And is like not hapless like Connor. Yeah. The opposite of Connor in many ways.
Connor has no politics and therefore bad politics. But Jared, what we saw in that one episode where he kind of had a weird bathroom encounter with Roman and is the Roy family choice to run for president, he's these guys on Twitter who talk about like not really kidding about like how women should be back at home and barefoot and pregnant and, you know, gay people shouldn't exist. You know, and I don't know that Josh Hawley himself, Don't Sue Us, has said that. But yeah, Hawley, Tom Cotton.
Yes, it's that ethos.
Ron DeSantis, were he at all handsome or charming, you know, like he's scary.
He's scary. And we know that he's coming back because we saw it in the trailer. And I think Jesse Armstrong, I think the Succession writers are smart enough to realize, even though this feels crazy, it's 2023. We're in a lead up to an election. Yeah. I think they're plugged in to that. So I do think it's going to get quite political. And we saw, you know, rumblings of that even with Shiv. And I do think with Connor, it's just like, it's so, I didn't even, until we started talking, I didn't even think for a second he could somehow end up being president, you know.
Yeah, in our push of it all is, in our preview episode, I said that maybe Jesse Armstrong's worldview is such that, like, the show ends partly with Connor becoming president.
which you know, given how he's polling, seems impossible, but, like,
who knows?
Happen. But I will say that what I actually am kind of excited for was the conversation that Connor had with Willa, where he was like, can we do something crazy for our wedding so that I don't have to spend $100 million and I can make it into the press? Can we have jetpacks? Can we have a rapper? Can we, like, that, like, that is so, that could make for one an incredible episode. And we know that they love an event, and they do get, we saw a snippet of them getting married in the teaser trailer as well. And Willa, my girl Willa, my playwright Willa, my ride or die, her being like, I quite wanted to have a nice wedding, and her having to be like, maybe that's not going to happen for her.
I'm going to be on a jetpack by the Statue of Liberty with a rapper.
We'll
get a rapper.
After all that she's been through, all the sacrifices, and this sounds crazy, I know, but in a vacuum, just go with me, she's made a lot of sacrifices to be with Connor.
She spent all her time in New Mexico with Connor.
Yeah, Connor, right? Yeah. And so the one thing that I think she was promised, that she thought she was promised, is I'm going to have a dank-ass, nice-ass wedding.
And beautiful photos in Vogue.
Beautiful, gorgeous, expensive, elaborate, whatever she wanted, whatever she wanted.
Yeah.
And for that to now sort of maybe be off the table, that was one of the biggest, like,
to become a CPAC clown show.
That is actually was quite stunning to me, and that was perfect.
Yeah. I am looking forward to that episode. That's very Chekhov's gun. You cannot have Connor talk about an insane wedding in episode one of your season and not then later toward the end show that wedding.
Like, it has to happen.
It must be done. Yeah, but I think overall, in terms of the show's political plot line, Logan mentioned, I have the president I want. And it's like, well, he didn't win yet. But okay, you're assuming he will because you have control of a huge media company.
Yeah.
Obviously, Shiv is maybe going to work for Jimenez, the opposition, we're assuming. Connor's in the mix. So, like, maybe the Pierce stuff, the PMG stuff, maybe that goes away sooner, and then the election is really the grand statement that this final season's going to make.
Yeah.
That sounds plausible.
Yeah, because, I mean, it feels like the vibes from the final scene of the episode with Logan sort of just like watching ATN and then like calling up Sid and being like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Like, who is this not camera ready guy giving the news? It felt very Trumpian to me. It felt very Trump watching Fox News and, you know, calling Tucker Carlson. So, like, even though that's not like specifically political, there is that sheen of like, this feels familiar. I don't like the way the story ended, and I'm getting flashbacks to an era.
And the writers of the show have had time to digest that, you know? Like, I think it's really interesting to see at the end of the episode, Logan, we haven't really seen many of the family actually substantively interacting with the content of one of their biggest properties, their news channel. And this was an example at the end of the first episode of the final season of Logan calling their head of programming, basically, and saying, I'm watching, what is this? Suggesting maybe this is how the bored king starts to feel, other than dealing with his rival kids or whatever. Yeah. This is how he starts to feel engaged again.
Yes.
Oh, he hadn't been paying attention to this property for a few years.
Yeah.
And then he's going to show up and start kicking things around and being like, this all needs to change. Okay. That is something that's happened in the real world.
Yes.
Like, all of a sudden, I care about this again.
And to sort of stoke your theory, too, again, I keep going back to the trailer, but that's all that we have to go off of right now. There is a scene, it ends with, like, Logan on the floor of ATN and everybody cheering his name and like chanting his name. So I do think that like theory has a lot of credence. I think that's a really smart point you made.
Well, thank you. We try to make smart points here.
Still watching. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, chips on the table. Who do you think is going to come out of Succession on top when it's all said and done?
Well, I'll get to that. But first, I think that this is a long process. So I think we should both say who we think is going to win eventually, but also who won each episode.
Okay,
right?
That's fair.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, there are so many winners and losers to track. That actually does make sense. Yeah. It goes up and down so fast.
But we will, you know, predict who we think ultimately win. And there is something at stake. I think because of this episode, there's actually something at Sushi. Sorry. Whoever wins, whoever gets closest to right, I guess, in our predictions, the other will buy them a sushi dinner. Not a snowmobile.
Yes. I won the last time we did this. So
That's right.
Let's just...
A delicious Aperol Spritz,
Okay.
Well, I'll go first. I think the winner of this episode, and I think you might agree with me, is Shiv.
Yeah.
Because she and her brothers got the thing they wanted, but she was the kind of point person for that.
She was the lead on that.
And she took center stage, which is what she wants.
Emotionally a loser, you know, with Tom. I think that's... Right. I think that was her... But like, in terms of the grand scheme of power and who's on top, Shiv definitely came out... I would say Shiv, then Roman, then Kendall. The kids are on top.
And, you know, Logan is kind of laterally. I don't think he's dropped. I mean, yes, he did lose this thing, but he also got that last word where he's basically now making them scared, like, oh, did we screw up?
Yeah.
So that said, do I think Shiv is going to be the successor of all succession? I don't know. I did say in our preview episode that I think Connor is going to win the presidency.
Yeah.
So I think I have to, for this episode, I will stick with that. I think at the end of this series, Connor of all people is the most victorious.
Connor's all, okay. Wow. That's really, that is really sort of great. That's so crazy to consider. Okay. And I know, so in our preview episode, I know that I said Shiv is my girl and I do, I will always have love for my girl Shiv, but I'm actually going to pick another queen who I think is going to come out on top. And I do think it might be a little Twitter brain. Maybe this is, you know, I'm, you know, flying high and fancy free, but I think Jerry, I think at the, when it's all said and done.
Terrific.
J. Smith Cameron will inherit the earth.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means if that's within Waystar Roy Co. I don't know if that's, you know, her, you know, just getting a nice vacation. I do think I'm going to say I think Jerry is going to come out from all of this the least scathed and the most on top.
We did see her in this episode say, hey, leave me out of this.
Yeah,
not my business. But she's still in the room.
But she's still in the room.
Yeah,
she's still in the room. That might be a, an alt choice. But I'm Jerry Hive, I got to say.
I think that's a good prediction. We'll stick with that until next week when we change it. But in the meantime, we want to hear from you.
Yes.
Stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Who do you think won or lost an episode? Who do you think is going to win or lose the whole thing?
Any theories, anything that we missed, anything that we didn't get to, please send it our way. We love to know things that we either messed up or that we just forgot or didn't even notice ourselves.
And if any of you, Orono, Augusta, Portland, if any of you listeners in Maine know what Anne's disaster was,
please.
We need to. What did she burn down an L.L. Bean outlet store?
In duck boots, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. But we want to know. Stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. Anne related, otherwise related predictions. We want to hear it. This has been Still Watching from Vanity Fair. Our producer is Emily Elias, and we had production help from Peyton Hayes. We had technical assistance from Jake Loomis. Stephen Valentino is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Alexis Quadrado. We'll be back next week for episode 2. Looking forward to seeing you then.
What with Jamie's divorce and Anne's disaster in Maine...
Want to stay up to date on the biggest stories in pop culture and entertainment? Then be sure to check out the TMZ podcast. I'm Charlie Cotton from TMZ, the TV show, and every day I'll sit down with a member of our news team to give exclusive breakdowns of the day's most talked about headlines, stories we break, and the stories you care about. So check out the TMZ podcast, Monday through Friday, and the other podcasts from the TMZ audio network like Last Days and TMZ Verified, available on all podcast platforms.